Acra.
The views expressed by volunteer on-air hosts do not represent or reflect the views of WGXC. WGXC is nonpartisan and does not endorse or support political candidates. To participate in WGXC's on-air dialogue, call 518-828-0290 or email info@wgxc.org.
Good morning. This is At Issue, and I'm Victor Mandolia. I'm with my co-host, Deborah Gilbert. Good morning.
Good morning.
And we are with Supervisor William Hughes, Jr., who is the fourth ward supervisor in the city of Hudson and is also a minority leader on the Board of Supervisors. And we're with Sarah Sterling as well, who's supervisor from Hudson's first ward, and you're the deputy minority leader. So we're going to talk about all kinds of county issues, and then toward the end of the show, talk a little bit about some of the projects that you're working on personally. But one of the issues that we've been covering over and over again here at the station and on At Issue as well is the issue of the airport. So maybe you guys could give me a little update on where things stand, and has everything been decided at this point?
No, I would say we're probably 90% towards our goal, maybe 95%. Obviously, when you keep throwing additional wrinkles into the plans, we had to go back to the drawing board and just to make sure that we're making a prudent decision, not only for, you know, us as supervisors, but for the entire county. And also the future. You want to look out 5 to 10 years to make sure that what we're doing is correct. Mm-hmm. You know, we were ready to vote on a resolution at least 3 times now. And each time it seems like that Mr. Nero comes in with a new plan or a new idea, and then we have to rethink what it is we're doing. Mm-hmm. At this point myself, I'm becoming a little frustrated.
For our listeners who aren't familiar, Carmen Nero is the majority stakeholder, I guess, on the property that was originally going to, the county was looking to take by eminent domain, right?
Yes. I'm becoming a little frustrated with the way he's working and communicating with us. Some of these ideas and thoughts, if you were going to put them out there, you should have put them out there in the beginning. Mm-hmm. When we were initially looking at taking over the 19-something acres and offering the 600-something thousand, we should have had other options put out there that we could have went to FAA with, not bring them in, you know, 10 minutes before we're supposed to vote on a very important resolution. And then when we go through that process and decide that we weren't going to move further, then you come in with a couple of supervisors on your side and another new idea. I mean, it's really a frustrating process, especially for those of us who aren't sitting near and dear to the situation. Mm-hmm. And with that being said, and I want to let my deputy get in here, but with that being said, you have to really commend Supervisor Bassin for the process in which he put in place to really handle this, because I can tell you the truth. I wouldn't have the patience.
Mm-hmm. Well, make sure you have the mic in front of you, and
Okay. Maybe
you could give us your take on what's going on.
Well, I have attended every single airport meeting, and I also commend Supervisor Bassin for really listening to everyone and bringing out all the facts and mm-hmm. finding out how many jets are actually landing and all of that. That was a lot of conjecture over the years, and Rich Moore has certainly been very forthcoming in their operations. Mm-hmm. And it just gets confusing when we have Supervisor Benson coming in with letters from Mr. Nero. It's like I woke up this morning thinking, well, how is he negotiating for the county? And I just came on as supervisor in 2012, and this has been going on for about 6 years when we tried to buy the property before, but I can't understand why our legal department is not negotiating with Mr. Nero directly. Mm-hmm. And we have all this things coming almost from left field and odd dates on them.
I mean, one of the strange things was that Supervisor Benson and Supervisor Mike Benson is the supervisor from New Lebanon.
New Lebanon.
But he hadn't really attended many of these the airport meetings, although he sat on them. From what I understand, he only attended the last two, and yet seems to be trying to call the shots on what's happening. Is it? Do you have any insight to it?
I don't think he's necessarily calling the shots. What generally has to happen, and it's a respect thing, when a supervisor comes forth with an issue or an idea, you want to listen to that idea, and you certainly don't want to discount it because it could be, you know, it could be a smart or imprudent idea. With that being said, you know, I think that the idea that Supervisor Parikh came up with and that the committee had worked through was a very smart idea. And, you know, Supervisor Benson, being a supervisor on that committee, had he wanted to bring forth these ideas that he has now, I'm not saying that that he shouldn't do it now, but he probably could have done it earlier along with Mr. Nero if that was the course they wanted to go. But look, we are where we are. We're going to look at the ideas. We have to. I think it's, a smart thing to do. I'm not sure that it's necessarily swaying anybody right now. And I could tell you, I wouldn't discount buying the property. I wouldn't. If we can agree to a deal, that something that FAA, it was palatable to the FAA and they were willing to reimburse us to a certain amount, then, we had to take a look at that, or a very hard look at that. But there is no way, I'll put it out there, some of these other supervisors say, there is no way I'm agreeing to any kind of first right refusal or any of that stuff with Mr. Nero. We buy the property free and clear. We get to do with it what we want to do with it, and we can go from that point forward.
So I don't want to waste too much time on the airport, but could you just give our listeners a brief discussion on what the proposal is that seems to have garnered the most support?
And one thing you might clarify is the mission of this committee. It's my understanding that it's just to bring it up to FAA safety standards. It's not addressing, like, the long-term future of the airport and whether it's going to turn into something the size of Albany Airport or...
Well, it's never going to be that. Yeah. So what the idea was is to basically... there are a couple of deals on the table now, and the main one they're looking at is possibly selling all the property to the county, with various caveats that Mr. Nero could have developmental rights, and some other things, because I didn't go to the last meeting, but it was still in that category, and I don't want any of that.
But the proposal that people seem to be coalescing around is to shorten the runway. One of the runways is completely in compliance, from what I understand, right?
Yep.
So, but we have two runways, and
it's the same runway. It's just one going one direction or the other.
Okay, I see. So there's two runways, but it depends on whether they're landing from one side of it or the other.
That's correct.
So, The proposal that I think that you alluded to, that John Parikh, who's the Greenport supervisor, I think he found a proposal from a long time ago, I think. Was that the case?
I know he got it from documents that he was reading through, and he found the idea.
So the proposal that he put forward does not entail a big taking of the property, I guess.
Does it go south instead of north? You just extend the other side of the runway instead of the north side.
Right.
It would be fully on county property, which the only thing is we would need from Mr. Nero is what we have now is the aggregate, rights and
like an easement.
Sort of like an easement.
Right, okay. So there would be no eminent domain of his property, or is there a certain dollar amount for the easement?
There would be a dollar amount for the easement, but no eminent domain.
I see.
And I think that's kind of what, was kind of bothering some of the people who obviously probably are some of the owners of that property. Is initially we were offering 600,000+, and now we're offering whatever we would have to pay for that aggregation rights, and that's it.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that he played the wrong hand? Is that what's going on?
I'm not going to speculate on that. What I am going
to
say
is... See, I can ask the question. You don't have to answer it.
You can ask the question. What I'm going to say is, my job is to look out for Columbia County and its taxpayers, and that's what we're doing, and I want to move forward from there.
Do you support the proposal that Parika put forward?
I do, yeah.
And what about you?
Yes.
So, and do you feel that there is general support? That do you think it's that when it comes before the full board that it will pass?
I think it'd probably be you're probably going to get maybe two supervisors that will vote against it, but I think overall it's
Benson
gonna,
and who else?
I just thinking that you know if anything you'll get one or two that will go against it. That's about it.
And back to the value of the airport to buy it, we've kind of turned that over to the Economic Development Committee, which I'm on, and Ken Flood is going to be bringing a proposal or talking to us about that next meeting, which I think is next Monday.
To buy the Meadow Greens golf course? Okay.
That would be a decision. Is this of an economic advantage to us to have that piece of property? And we, you know, one hand, county doesn't want to be in the business of, say, running a golf course or something. We're trying to get out of running businesses.
Right.
But
we don't do a good job with it.
A lot of counties or municipalities run golf courses and other park, you know, as
and
a
it's
park.
A great piece of property. We could have goats there. The county
that was
going,
another proposal, right?
Ural is here, to digress a little bit. And they want to start a lot of goat herds in Columbia County, and I understand they will supply you with the goats or something. So, and that's a huge business coming to this county.
Wow.
So,
and for
it
milk?
Could be an agricultural center like the one they are starting in Copaic.
Yeah.
So, I guess we sort of beat the airport to death. we've been talking about it for months and months here.
One thing, the county should be commended for handling this in such a transparent way. I think it's unprecedented.
I think a majority of that goes to Supervisor Bassin and Parika. Those two have been doing a lot of the legwork, especially Supervisor Bassin.
And we had Supervisor Bassin here on the show, I guess, about a month ago. And the archive of that show is up on our Facebook page. The Facebook page is facebook.com/@issue spelled out. And we post all of the upcoming guests there, and as well as archives of each of the shows. So if you want to go back and hear Supervisor Bassin, it was a great interview. I thought it was really informative, and he really has his head wrapped around the finances of this county in a way that is refreshing. It's really great. So check that out if you haven't heard it. So the next big dollar item that the county is looking to spend, we've already renovated the courthouse. It's almost done. The issue over Pine Haven Nursing Home and rebuilding it or building a new location for it has been it's floated as long as I've been in the county. I guess since 2006, we've been hearing about it. But it does seem like it's getting to a point where the county is going to have to make a decision. And maybe you could fill us in about where Pine Haven stands right now. Sarah, you made the Register Star article on Pine Haven this morning. So maybe you could start. Just make sure that your mic is straight ahead.
On the spot here. Well, there's...
You can always pass to the majority, the minority leader.
There's a lot of questions. I mean, Pine Haven is... We're probably spending out of pocket about $1.5 million a year to keep Pine Haven going right now.
And so just for our listeners who don't know, so Pine Haven is the county-run and county-owned nursing home.
Yes.
Right.
And we're looking at that. The state kind of wants people out of the or counties out of the nursing home business. A lot of counties have sold their nursing homes to private organizations, and so we're doing our due diligence of really looking at the numbers and then looking towards the future. Like what is this going to cost us in the future when we spend $32 million on a new nursing home? And how much out of pocket are we going to be then? And the numbers are quite a bit bigger. I cannot quote you exactly, but and then that there's our responsibility to the taxpayers now. I think when we have those actual numbers, taxpayers and everybody's been thinking, oh, well, I when I get to a place where I'm going to need care like that, that can always go to Pine Haven. And the rest of the taxpayers are going to say, saying, wait a minute, my taxes are going to go up 10% a year.
So you're talking about a building, a new facility costing about $32 million. So roughly what is the county's annual budget, just so people have can wrap their heads around it?
Their annual budget for Pine Haven?
No, for the county itself.
This year is probably going to be about $150 million.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
A majority of that is DSS, you know, about a third. Pine Haven actually has a separate budget from separate books from the county's books.
Uh-huh.
Just because the state requires that. And it's almost run as a separate entity in itself.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to, like Sarah said, we have to subsidize that about $1.1 to $1.5 million, depending on, you know, our reimbursements, which we just found out yesterday is going to go up a little bit, and our occupancy, which we found out fluctuates between 85% and 90%.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that's concerning to me, understanding why it is that we're not running at full capacity. I know the director out there is moving towards doing some rehabilitation type things. And so when we get into looking at to wanting to do a new home, or the question of wanting to do a new home, you want to have a good understanding of those numbers and know that if we build this facility that we could be running close to full capacity. Because if we aren't, that burden falls back on the taxpayers.
Mm-hmm.
And then it becomes, from a molehill to a mountain.
Right. From what I understand, though, Columbia County has the oldest population in the state, right? So nursing home beds is something that is going to become more and more necessary in the county, right?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
One thing people may wonder is, why do we need a new facility? Can't the old facility keep functioning going forward?
That's a good question. Pine Haven, along with all our other county buildings, we have sank very little, if any, money really into our county buildings other than Band-Aids, new doors, new roofs, the basic infrastructure stuff. And what's happening is our infrastructure is crumbling around us,
mm-hmm.
literally. And Pine Haven is probably in the most imminent danger as far as being antiquated. So what we need to do, if we aren't going to build a new building, then we probably need to get out of the business and allow someone else to come in and build a new facility. So the question isn't whether we're going to build a new facility. The question is who's going to build a new facility if we're going to keep Pine Haven.
Are the governor's tax property tax initiatives curtailing some of the money that might otherwise be available for infrastructure?
See, that isn't clear to us. I don't believe so. I would say I don't believe so, but it isn't clear where the state is getting their monies and where they're redirecting their monies when it comes to tax initiatives. I've been working with the governor's team as of late to try to get my head wrapped around that. And I know he does have something posted on his website about how municipalities can take advantage, but it's not sure on the budget end where those monies are coming from and how they're being redirected. So I don't know how that applies to us as counties, but back to Pine Haven directly. We've since Supervisor Andrews, in his passing, Larry Andrews, and Robert Andrews, since those two were diligently working on this project, we've sank quite a bit of money into this project already as far as architectural drawings, CEQAs, environmental studies. So we're a great deal of money in already. So whether we do this project or not, I bet we spent, $500,000 to $600,000 at least.
Well, in the article this morning, Ron Campanera, who's the is the controller and the county controller, said that we're in for close to 400,000 of the 1.2 million. So,
okay.
So about half, roughly half of the money allocated for this phase of the project.
Mm-hmm.
With the loss of the home for the aged here in Hudson, and we also our radio station serves Greene County as well, and I think there's virtually no nursing homes in Greene County as well. So I think we're also providing services for those residents as well. It would seem like we really got to figure this out. How do we keep these beds, and how do we make the facility even better? But it does seem quite daunting, the price tag on it.
Well, the price tag is daunting if we're footing the full bill.
Right.
And that's the question. That's why you don't have, you know, many of us as supervisors running towards this issue, because no one is giving us a clear answer from the state as to what our level of reimbursement is going to be. Is it going to be 80%, 85%? Is it going to be 75 cents on the dollar? What is it? Just tell us what it's going to be so we can go from there.
Because about 2 years ago, when the proposal was coming forward, the mantra was that it was going to be like 90 or 95% reimbursed,
correct,
right? So
yep.
That has changed now.
Well, again,
we don't know.
We don't know. There's speculation. Mm-hmm. It could be still 90%. It could go up. It could go down a little bit. I'm going to be honest, you know, speaking personally, if we can get 90% reimbursement, I'm in favor of the project. And for various reasons, you know, I think that we want to keep a nursing home here. We have several nursing homes, so it's not like we don't have nursing homes in Clement County. We have about five.
And those are, I know we have Whittier.
You have Whittier,
right?
You have Livingston, you have Barnwell.
Okay.
I forgot the Venice Nursing Home. I forgot the other one.
Uh-huh, okay.
So we do have a few here in Columbia County.
But not of the scale that Pine
and
Haven.
And that was the whole
right?
thing is everybody believes that Pine Haven is ran at a bigger scale. You know, the care there is a little better. That's just a rumor. I've never been there, but, you know, stay there myself. So hopefully I won't be there for a while.
We're going to try to keep you out.
but so with that being said, you know, and again, we have such an aging population. I would favor it if we can get a favorable reimbursement. But if we're not going to get that favorable reimbursement, then, yeah, we're going to have to take a hard look at that. And going aside from that, staffing, how much it's costing for staff, you know, how much it's going to cost for, you know, fuel and energy, all these kinds of things we need to take a hard look at.
Mm-hmm. When do you think that will become clear?
Well,
I don't.
2020.
Payments are late all the time. The county, later and later with all the kind of payments that we get from in various departments. And I don't see any clear message from the state at all, and I don't think they're going to promise us anything. And then if we don't have that guarantee, how can we operate?
Is the old building just not workable? It can't even with upgrades and a lot of money sunk into it. It's just it can't be retrofitted for a modern nursing home at this point.
Oh no, you can retrofit it. You have to take every client out of there to do so, though.
Right.
You know, first of all, where are we going to send that many, you know, clients? Secondly,
and roughly how many clients are there?
I forgot the number. It was 100, and because we're only at 85 to 90% occupancy, maybe 100 now.
Oh, so it's really substantial.
Oh yeah, and you're talking about people in some cases with severe needs.
Right.
So it's not like you're moving a healthy person to an apartment until you're done. You know, you're moving people in there that has serious heart issues,
right.
You know, kidney issues, whatever.
There are different wings, so it's possible, but I think they've looked at that. And
right, we did look at that, and they said that we could. That was back then when we had the two Andrews, Larry and Robin, on the project. Can we, you know, rehab the building wing by wing? And it was determined that we would have to pretty much move everybody out.
For the same reason that the the judges went to Claverick, I guess, right, in the courthouse. It just the cost to stay just outweigh just
right.
getting out and dealing with it.
Yeah.
And you have to look at we'd like to run at full capacity, but if a flu comes in or something, the facility gets shut down and you can't take on any new clients until that's gone.
Mm-hmm.
So you're at the mercy of a lot of factors. And then because it's older, we're not as we can't be competitive.
Right. So you pretty much said that you're in support of it. If the reimbursement is substantial. I mean,
yes.
Sarah, do you feel the same way?
I need to see a few more figures on this because, number one, what the county has to do is we have to do the plans and then we have to bid those. And we're saying we can't spend more than $32 million. Mm-hmm. Right now, I believe the plans, they're estimating they would cost more than that.
Mm-hmm.
So then we're going to have to trim from these plans. We can't do that until we get the full plans and spend
right.
the $400,000.
Right.
So you have to spend money to figure out if you can even do it in the first place.
Right.
And then from the figures I saw lately of what it's going to cost for the new facility, I don't see how we can do it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you can ask the taxpayers to increase their tax load 10% a year.
See, and that's one of the questions that I think needs to be asked. And in talking with Chairman Grattan, he was going to put it out there, you know, go directly to the taxpayers and let them know that, you know, if we move forward, your taxes would go up X. We don't know what X is, but, you know, you don't want to try to sneak this in under the taxpayer and say, oh, we could build this and it won't cost you anymore.
So the chair is actually considering putting it as a referendum?
Well, see, and that's the question. I'm not sure we can put that out for referendum because the general rule is in the municipal law is you can't RFP an idea to try to get a baseline price. So
an RFP is a request for proposals.
Sorry about that acronym.
It's never a problem. I just try to make sure that our listeners who aren't as familiar as we are understand what we're talking about.
So to get an understanding, you know, he probably could do some kind of online polling or something through the Register Star or something of that nature,
mm-hmm.
To try to get a baseline of who was in favor and who was not.
So for our listeners who has just joined us, I'm Victor Mandolia. This is At Issue. I'm with Deborah Gilbert, who is my co-host, and we're with Sarah Sterling, who is the first ward supervisor in the city of Hudson and is the deputy minority leader on the Board of Supervisors, and we're with William Hughes Jr., who is minority leader on the Board of Supervisors as well, and he represents the fourth ward in the city of Hudson. Let's see. Well, one of the things that, since we're sort of talking a little bit about the courthouse, one of the things that you, Sarah, told me a little bit, you did a tour recently of the courthouse and of the prison. Maybe you could tell listeners a little bit about that. I think it's really interesting.
Well, I'm on the Public Works Committee, among other committees. It gets a little, we have a lot of committees, a lot of things to do. But it's all kind of fascinating, and the courthouse, which is costing about $9 million, which looks like a bargain now when you look at Pinehaven and these other numbers, they are doing a fabulous job of renovation there. The new wing, they've replicated the marble. The paint colors are wonderful. Dave Robinson is doing a fabulous job. Like, he's renovated the library. There's old metal shelves there. He's had them sanded and stripped. I mean, everything is just quality, elegance, and I don't think they overspent money on it either.
Mm-hmm.
It's all handicapped accessible now, and they figured out how to change the front of the
building. So people in wheelchairs won't have to crawl up the stairs anymore.
Right. Or carried up or something. But they've even figured out how to do it so that it's not...
I don't mean to make light of it,
no,
because it
no.
actually did happen, and it's a horrible thing.
City Hall here, too. We have
right.
the same problem. And the front of the buildings look wonderful. You won't even notice that it's all ramps and all of that. It just... So I've had tours, and... And I think in the original plans, they had not considered changing the heating system, and it got part of the way through, and it became obvious that the heating system
had
was
to.
So antiquated, we should really do that now. So that was an added expense, and it's still coming in. I mean, that's add-ons, but it's still coming in under budget. And now we're replacing the windows in the front to bring them all back to what the original windows looked like. Tour, and it's all wonderful. And then I get down to the basement, and you get the bowels of the building, and it's very neat and clean down there, and then you go over the end where the prisoners are brought in. And it's not painted puke green. It's kind of a nice yellow. But you go into this room, and I was just so struck after coming from upstairs, and then you go down, and it just felt like I was going into a dungeon. You come in, and there's a metal bench, because everything
has to be
tied down.
Of course, it is a dungeon.
It is. I guess. But it's a metal dungeon with big rings on the wall, because I guess people sit there and get handcuffed
to the wall.
And, I mean, realistically, you have to manage prisoners, and there's a lot of rules on to how everything is managed. And then there's two cells in the back and some very rough kind of walls there. And it just struck me. I mean, here I'm privileged to be here with all of you in the light, in the life of our city. And then when you're a prisoner, it's pretty frightening. And I just thought, when you're coming in to that situation, and
of course they're innocent until proven guilty.
Innocent until proven guilty. So it just seemed like, wow, if could be some ray of hope or something on the walls. Now, I'm an artist, so I need to think of, could get some art in here. And of course you can't put framed anything. You can't have anything that could be taken and turned into a weapon. But I thought, well, maybe we could paint some murals or something. So I went out to talk to the sheriff, and he thought it was a wonderful idea. And he actually said there's a lot of prisoners out there that are artists that they use on projects when they can. And he said they would love to have art classes out there. They're very enthusiastic. And then Under Sheriff Davey was there too. And I actually have a friend who teaches art in prisons over in the Berkshires. And she was saying it's such a drive for her. And Under Sheriff Davey said, wow, I'd love to have somebody here teaching our inmates art. Mm-hmm. So we may have a little project going here. So the Sheriff Bartlett was going to talk to, Office of Corrections or something.
Yes, OCA. Mm-hmm.
OCA, to find out what the rules are of what we could do, because I'm sure there's such a wealth of art talent around here to get people to paint some murals on the walls.
Right.
Just because if you're sitting in a little dark cell, if you could just look at a vista or a deer or something.
Well, and plus just the process of doing art, and it sometimes connects with people in a way that is very positive, and it's a good thing for them, for their rehabilitation.
Yeah, there's a lot of art in prison projects, because I Googled this to see if what the rules would be about putting something on the wall, and it was all about art classes in the prisons.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's encouraging. That's really.
Sarah, when was the courthouse built? Do you know?
Oh, don't ask me that question.
God, this
made me think. You know, the dungeon description.
It's the fifth courthouse, right?
Yeah. This is the third one on that location.
Right.
The two previous burned down, and that's why, if you look at that that particular courthouse, there's no wood. It's all marble and the stone.
They learned their lesson after it burned down twice.
So,
and wasn't there a prison behind there?
A prison behind there that was taken down.
And it's a Warren and Wetmore building. I mean, the Warren and Wetmore designed Grand Central Station. It's a major building that we have here in Columbia County and in Hudson that is a real jewel. So it's really great to see it polished up. And so when is the open date?
I did the Nichols tour myself Friday by myself with Dave Robinson, and
the Nichols tour is the Judge Nichols tour.
So I asked him that, and they're looking to at the end of the month to be done with all the major inside construction. Some outside stuff is going to have to wait until spring on the snow melt before they can finish the ramp. And well, the ramp is done, but they can finish the
all the cement stuff has to be warmer.
Yeah, and you the planting and you know, the trees and stuff like that. But the inside, probably by the end of the month, and then another month and a half to you know, clean the whole place up. If you go in, you can still see where there's a great deal of dust. And as someone you know, I worked there before going out on disability. I worked there for about 4 years. And so that's how I want to speak to when Sarah was talking about the holding cell area. I went down and saw the new holding cell area, mm-hmm. and I can tell you right now, that's
it's a major improvement.
Major improvement from where the
prison.
It shook Sarah up, and it still was a major step in the right direction.
There, when I used to work there, I was like, holy, please never allow me to come down here. You know, it was one of those things. And I went down there today, and they had bulletproof plexiglass where they can talk to their lawyers, mm-hmm. and you know, they had where you can go from the cell to the bathroom without, you know, you look at it as, and you would say, you know, that's a easy comfort or whatever, but you know, that couldn't happen before.
Right.
It was a really dark, dingy place. And so that's a major improvement from where they were. I'm going to tell you that.
And I think in our new police courthouse over here too,
the city
conditions
court.
Will be much improved.
Yeah. I mean, the Hudson Police Department and court is a fiasco. I mean, it's just really, it's been needed so long. So it's great that it's on track to get done. So Bill, you mentioned a project that you were talking about with working on Central Business Office. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
So this is a new idea that came up after we had our internal audits. And what was determined is through our internal audits is that our revenues that are coming in, and when we talk about revenues is Medicaid payments, things that we voucher for to the federal and state governments. And these are monies that are supposed to be coming back to us in a timely fashion. And what is became glaringly evident is that a lot of times we're not sure when these funds are coming back, and that's not our fault really. You know, the state and federal government, depending on how the government is running, is when we're going to get reimbursed. What happens with us though is we lose track of that money sometimes, or if proper records isn't kept, we receive those monies that were supposed to come in 2012 and come in 2014, and we don't know where to book them. There are times where we're booking monies that we haven't received yet. It is really a nightmare on our budget. And with that being said, the idea was to look at all the various departments in the county, for example, Mental Health Association, DS, Department of Social Services, excuse me, the acronyms, and to look at their financial functions within each department and see if we could centralize them within the treasurer's office. If not the body itself, at least, you know, that part of the information, to make sure that information is readily available and flowing to the treasurer, so that when we do have to issue a report to supervisors and the state controller, we could do that in a more expeditious fashion, mm-hmm. than what we've been doing right now.
Has the IT department been helpful?
We just brought the IT guy in, and he basically has helped us to this point set up an online survey. So we're going to go department by department looking at job functions. So one of the things that's going to come out of this, even if we do nothing, we will have a good baseline for what it is, you know, our workers are doing in a lot of these departments.
Now, you know, people don't want to hear you say, even if we do nothing.
Well, look, we're not spending
I'm
money.
Just playing, I'm playing.
Even if we don't change what's happening.
No, I'm sorry.
Good.
This is going to cost us. This isn't going to cost us anything. So you're using brain power, and we're not spending county attorney money in time right now. But we're looking at each department, and some of the departments we don't need to take a hard look at. But there are others where in the past, for example, you look at the Department of Social Services. You know, we had a $9 million gap that got missed, you know, and I think it was 2009, 2010. And that was in part because the information wasn't flowing between the supervisors in the department. And when we did find out, you know, we thought we had a $25 million fund balance, and it turned out we only had maybe a $15 million fund balance, and everybody was in shock. Mm-hmm. So those types of incidents that happen probably would not have happened if we had had a central business office. And we had it happen again over at the mental health department. So, you know, we want to take a look at that and see if we can centralize these type of functions within the county.
How are the renovations going at DSS, the Department of Social Services?
So I think they've slowed, you know, they've slowed down a little bit since the whole airport, because Art Basson and a few of the supervisors that went out, Betty Young, Supervisor Roy Brown, are no longer here. I think it's slowed down a little bit. We just have so much to do, to be honest. But we don't want to stretch that and you know, kick it aside. I know Supervisor Cross is that's on his plate, and he keeps it on his radar. So we're moving forward with it, but it's definitely slow going. I'm just on so many committees, I couldn't take that on. I mean, I'm on like 13, 14 when you add in the subcommittees. And that was one of the things where Supervisor Sterling had mentioned that we're so busy. I remember when people was like, wow, you know, I want to run from city council, come over here where you guys don't do anything on the county level. She can tell you that is not the case, mm-hmm. Let me tell you. But, yeah, so I think DSS is on the radar. We're looking at to see how much we are going to have to spend.
Glad that we wound up buying the building and DSS stayed there?
I am. I think the building could be something good could be done with the building. It's all about finances. Mm-hmm. It's all about finances. Had we gone through with the initial plan of the whole, should I say, Aquamic?
Well, Aquamic is the next question, might as well go there. Yeah.
Well, had we gone through with that plan, we were going to be $30-something million in on that whole project. Not even counting what it was going to cost the county and transportation. Mm-hmm. So that would have been abysmal for us if we would have went through with that plan. It was just a terrible idea from day one, at least in my opinion. Some others may disagree, but in my opinion, it was a bad idea.
And is it on the market? There was talk that it was going to be sold this year. Is that still
looking? We're still looking to do that, probably in around June. Or sometime in around the summertime when we believe the market is a little better. Mm-hmm.
Tough build. I mean, it's a tough. It's a lot of property, but the building is it's a tough sell. I mean, what do you do with it?
I look at it.
Maybe that company that was interested in the Greenport School would be interested in it.
Maybe. you're looking at some abatement and stuff like that. But to get on the record, I was one of only two that voted no to buying the building. So mm-hmm. I wasn't in favor of buying it in the first place.
Mm-hmm. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the Democratic caucus, because there's been a big shift. Robin Andrews lost her seat in Claverick, but the Democrats picked up a number of seats as well. And the caucus has more people in it than it's had in some time, right?
Yeah, it's politically diverse. I would say that. It's a unique caucus, for sure. We have Ms. Lagonia, Supervisor Lagonia, Rob Lagonia,
right,
who is a registered Republican, who is sitting in the caucus with us. We have
he ran as a Democrat in last year.
Yeah. We have Supervisor Art Baer, who I believe was an independent, was a Republican, then an independent, and is now a Democrat and is caucusing with us, along with pretty much most of the Democrats that are caucusing with us.
So, and how's that going with Supervisor Baer?
Surprisingly well. You know, he there are issues where we differ, but I think that's natural par for the course when you talk about Democrats. Mm-hmm. We generally differ quite a bit. One of the things that I like, though, is we can come in and we can come up with ideas and we can agree to disagree and go out on the floor and vote our conscience. Mm-hmm. But we have an open dialogue. That's one of the things I like to do. There's, as long as you're respectful to your fellow supervisor, there's nothing barred.
So you're the minority leader, but in general, you rarely, if ever, have like a straight party line where people are ordered to vote a certain way.
We never do that.
Democrats, right?
Good luck.
We're
Republicans are told how to vote.
Well, that's what we
comply.
That's one of the things we hear. One of the things I really do like, and you can see the growth is The fact that I was able to have Sarah, you know, be my deputy, and it is a learning curve. You know, it's one of those things where people thinking you can step into a leadership role in the county, and that's not necessarily true, because you have so many moving parts, and she could tell you, you have to learn a great deal.
23 silos, as they say, right?
Yeah, and just to even get respect to your fellow supervisors, you need to be sure about what it is you're talking about, let alone get into a leadership position.
You know, I forgot to ask earlier when we were talking about IT, but I was poking around the county website, which is pretty abysmal. I noticed that you really can't get any information online about deeds or mortgages or anything like that. And you can't apply for any permits or any of the applications that you would have to file. Is there movement on that? I mean, it's been talked for years about everything going online. It's still not online. What's going on?
And are the resolutions posted before the meetings? The Board of Supervisors meetings? They were okay. For a while.
Right. So I'll take the... I'll have to parse all this out. So first of all, about online applications and things of that nature, we are still moving towards that direction. It is moving very slowly. And quite frankly, the first thing I want to see online is applications. I want to see us integrate as many of our DSS applications, Department of Social Services applications, online before we get to any other departments, quite frankly.
Because the cost is so high.
Because right. And we have to carry so many people as staff and things of that nature. So once we get that done, I think moving towards getting, you know, some of the things that you mentioned online is certainly a priority. You know, we're just getting into MIS. And I could tell you, when I joined the board in 2007, I dusted off the old management information systems out. And the county was looking to do that in 2002, and we're just doing it now. Mm-hmm. So technology-wise, we're a little bit behind the curve, but with Rick Giuliani, our new director of MIS, we are moving much faster than we were in the past.
I'm still not impressed.
That's the best answer I could give you.
It's not on you. I mean, I just was wondering if there was talk that was happening elsewhere that we just haven't heard about. That's the thing.
Yeah.
No. I'd really like to know which committees both of you sit on. I think it'd be interesting to our listeners.
Go first, Sarah. Okay.
I'll probably forget.
Every time I talk to them, they're going to a meeting, so I know it's a lot.
I'm on economic development, public works, Pine Haven subcommittee, health and medical. I'm now on all the negotiations that are going on with the various...
So it's like contract negotiations?
Contract negotiations, where I'm going today. And I'm now on the Community Services Board, and we're looking for somebody for now. I opened my mouth at a meeting, and I said, well, how many times have they meet? I said, oh, thank you, Sarah.
haven't you learned? You just keep your hand down. That's
I'm curious too. It's like I want to know what all these.
One of the things about committees, and this is one of the beauty parts about having, you know, the amount of supervisors you have for Hudson, is we kind of get to spread out and be on all the committees. If you were one from one town, you're probably
you could never cover that many.
Right? You're
committees.
Probably sitting off maybe 3-4 tops,
right?
And there's no way that you could know what's going on. In our case, we can meet for lunch or whatever and communicate with each other, you know, much better. But as minority leader, I sit on the resolutions committee, which on that committee you sign each resolution before it goes to the floor. I'm on point one committee,
and it takes the chair and either the minority leader or the majority leader to move something to the floor, right?
Yes, and there's been quite a few times where I haven't signed a resolution. And, you know, I just let the chair and my majority leader send that to the floor.
Have you ever been able to completely block something from going to the floor?
It's funny enough you say that because one of the resolutions that I won't mention which one didn't sign it, but I didn't sign it. And one of the other two didn't sign it. Stopped the first time the gun legislation from coming to the floor. Mm-hmm. It came the second time because of so much pressure, but the first time we were able to stop that from coming to the up for a vote. Mm-hmm. That was one that just sticks in my mind. But there was a couple other times that that happened as well.
And often if there's something we don't like, we meet with everybody before, and usually it gets postponed or something until it's mm-hmm. clarified.
Yeah. I'm also on point one, which point one committee is sort of like a sub quasi committee that overlooks the resolutions, all resolutions before they go to finance. And I'm also on finance. I'm on public safety, health and mental health, human services, labor management, and a few other subcommittees, which trying to remember their names is something else. And then I deal with most of your day-to-day operational and labor issues on a phone call basis. Mm-hmm. So the chairman may call me and say, hey, we have this issue or whatever. And now I'm working with him and Supervisor Morrell on county infrastructure issues. And that isn't necessarily a committee. It's just something that we're doing, along with the CBO program that the county business office program we're looking at. Those aren't really per se committees. Those are things we're putting in place and we're meeting.
They're more an initiative than
right.
really a formal committee.
And also I'm working with the sheriff's department to come up with a minority recruiting program. And the sheriff has been very cooperative on that. And we're going to be looking to kick something off here in the very soon, the very near future. So hopefully I can have an announcement for that. I was pretty impressed with, we just had a small program, but with the correctional test that came out, he allowed me to open a sub office or sub, you could say office, to do applications and things of that nature here in the city of Hudson. He did one in, I believe, Hillsdale and one in Kinderhook.
Mm-hmm.
And what that was is, people who are looking to take the test could come in and talk to the correctional officers, find out what the job entailed, see if they qualify for the program, and then help them fill out the forms. And that's something that we haven't done in the past, and we did that just 2 weeks ago. And we had quite a few people come in. So I definitely commend the sheriff for that. So
is there any outreach planned for the LGBT community?
There is, actually, for the sheriff recruiting. With the sheriff recruiting, we're gonna pretty extensive. I don't want to take any thunder from the sheriff, so I'll just briefly mention what we're doing. We want to get people from the sheriff's department, the city of Hudson, state police, and any other police department that would like to join them, I'm assuming, come together and go to the schools, fairs. I think the sheriff is laying out a really exciting program of how he wants to do that. Mm-hmm. And again, we hope to roll that out sometime here in the very near future.
That's great news.
Yeah, but also back to the committees just for a second. I think there's about 8 supervisors on each committee, and they all pull their weight, and that's how you get to know each other and work with each other. I'm getting drowned out.
It doesn't sound as bad. We have a train coming through. It doesn't sound as bad to our listeners. It sounds really bad here in the studio. It's part of doing a live show, though.
Wow, it's definitely right in our air.
They're really laying on it today, though.
One thing I'd like to know is if a member of the public wanted to know who sits on, say, the Social Services Committee, mm-hmm. could they go to the county website and find a list of committees?
Mm-hmm. It's under board links, right?
Yeah, that's posted. Except for sometimes a lot of your subcommittees aren't put on there. For example, the Labor Management Committee, or probably the finance finance directly, but we have a subcommittee looking at salaries and benefits and things of that nature. So those committees probably aren't on the website. Again, though, those aren't standing committees. Those are subcommittees. So more than like, or even the DSS renovation committee, that probably isn't there either.
Yeah, and they're all open to the public, and that the calendar's online too.
I had another question. Tell me about the Board of Ethics.
Okay, so the Board of Ethics, we had 6 members. we added a supervisor, former supervisor, Robin Andrews, Greg Mosley, and Seth Rapport from the Democratic. And but I just received notice that Seth Rapport has now put in his resignation, so we will be looking for another member for that particular board. On the Republican end, you had, I can't remember the members now. But it was going to
be Rick Washburn.
Rick Washburn, yes.
Wilbur, Mr. Wilbur.
I think Kim Wilbur's position was replaced. I think he was one of the ones that agreed to resign, and another Republican was put up. Oh, James Keegan. So Washburn, Keegan.
Former Claverick supervisor, right?
Yep. And
so
one
you
more.
Have two former Claverick supervisors now on the Board
now
of Ethics.
Now on the Board of Ethics. That's just okay with me. I'm fine with that. Especially getting coming from that governmental perspective, I think having Greg Mosley level-headed, and really in most respects bipartisan, what is a good
or
addition
nonpartisan?
To nonpartisan. Actually, he probably is nonpartisan.
I like Greg Mosley a lot.
Is there any way the board could get their own attorney?
I just don't know about their operational rules enough about their operational rules to, I mean, I know they do have a small budget, so I'm not sure what it is they could afford.
It's such an important role because not only are they the Board of Ethics for the county, but a lot of the towns as well, and I think in the city of Hudson as well. Mm. So they play such an important part in conflicts and other things like that. First of all, it's great to hear that it's being rejuvenated because I think at one point there was only one person on or something and not really functioning. So yeah. that's good news. But having a highly functioning Board of Ethics would serve the county and the towns very well, I think.
Well, I think, you know, if you looked in years past, the Board of Ethics, along with other government agencies, just wasn't an issue. People used to turn their heads to stuff and used to, you know, really be disenfranchised with government. And as you see people becoming more and more educated, they're starting to ask the hard questions. And if they can't get answers to their questions, they're looking to things like a FOIL and the Board of Ethics to get those answers that they probably wouldn't have gotten.
FOIL is the Freedom of Information Law.
They're a very secretive organization, and it's my understanding that they don't keep any written records.
Well, that rule I know was within the ethics laws, is where really going in there, they were supposed to be operating. Not under secrecy, but it was almost an executive session kind of thing. And so outside of talking to people who they were bringing in for investigations, really it was supposed to be almost like a sealed kind of operation.
Because of the charge of acting unethically does not equal actual conflict or actual unethical behavior, so it's to protect the innocent.
Yes.
Unfortunately, it's been used as a way to intimidate and bully political opponents.
Well, to that though, I think we had a couple of incidences that got out of hand, unfortunately, and I'm hoping that one, that will be addressed, and two, we don't have those kinds of incidences going forward with the new people that are sitting on the board.
Would you like to see the ethics law strengthened?
See, when I drew, you know, I was one of the crafters of the previous ethics laws when I came on the Board of Supervisors. That was one of the first things I did in 2007. And one of the things I had in there that actually got written out when I was going through to try to get this passed was to allow anyone from the general public to file an ethics complaint. And I think it was a mistake, and I argued it, but you know, I lost that argument, that you had to be an elected official, because mm-hmm. that kind of put it back in the hands of those whom the
in
general
the
public
room,
may have a problem with.
So unfortunately, we have to call it there. But we have been with Supervisor William.